Understand that the only way we are going to confront the evil of corporate capitalism is by going out in the street and obstructing the ability of this movement to repress, exploit, and kill.
Author and activist Chris Hedges pulls no punches in a major keynote address here in Washington, D.C., and protesters confront the white supremacist organization, the National Policy Institute, at their meeting here.
No racist! No KKK!
No fascist USA!
No racist! No KKK!
No fascist USA!
All that and more coming up. Welcome to this special edition of Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the on-the-ground edition on 89.3 WPFW, Pacifica's listener-powered station for jazz and justice in the nation's capital. I'm Esther Averam. Well, today our focus is the wide-ranging keynote address by author and activist Chris Hedges at the major summit on Saudi Arabia organized by Code Pink this past weekend, March 5th and 6th, 2016, here in Washington, D.C. But before we get to Chris Hedges, here are our headlines for this week. Protesters with banners, placards, and giant cardboard cutouts were out in force on Saturday outside the Ronald Reagan Building and International Trade Center as a white supremacist organization, the National Policy Institute, or NPI, held a conference there.
No racist! No KKK! No fascist USA! No racist! No KKK!
No fascist USA!
No racist! No KKK!
No fascist USA!
This is not the first time the NPI has felt like they could create a safe space, that there's an opening for this kind of fascist venom and bile. That's not, in fact, with a candidate like Donald Trump, that's opening doors for groups like the NPI. You know, I think we should be on guard.
NPI, no damn good. You should wear a sheet and hood. NPI, no damn good. You should wear a sheet and hood.
The goal of the protesters was to disrupt the NPI conference. Meanwhile, NPI said that the focus of their gathering was to discuss the candidacy of Donald Trump, which they say has energized their movement. The Southern Poverty Law Center has categorized the NPI as a hate group. Starting at noon today, the Foundation for Middle East Peace, Human Rights Watch, and Americans for Peace is holding a panel discussion on Human Rights Watch's new report, Occupation Inc., How Settlement Businesses Contribute to Israel's Violations of Palestinian Rights. That's in room 441 of the Cannon House office building on Capitol Hill. Human Rights Watch says in the report that businesses should stop operating in, financing, servicing, or trading with Israeli settlements in order to comply with their human rights responsibilities. The organization adds that those activities in Israeli settlements contribute to and benefit from an inherently unlawful and abusive system that violates the rights of Palestinians. Discussing the report will be its author, Sarah Sadoun, who is the Leonard H. Sandler Fellow at Human Rights Watch, and Laura Friedman, the Director of Policy and Government Relations for Americans for Peace Now. That's beginning at noon today, room 441, Cannon House office building on Capitol Hill. In Planet News, environmental activists are holding a Cove Point Spring Break Action Camp in Southern Maryland for activists, college students, and anyone else wanting to learn more about the battle that's being waged against fracking in the Mid-Atlantic region. The camp includes workshops and panels on kayaktivism taught by the people who made it famous in the Northwest, the Backbone Campaign, and also includes Direct Action 101, blockades, action climbing, creating protest art, indigenous history of this area, and campaign planning and strategy. The Cove Point Spring Break is being co-hosted by We Are Cove Point, Calvert Citizens for a Healthy Community, SEED, Beyond Extreme Energy, and the Backbone Campaign. Now, in our culture and media moment, Trapped is a new documentary about the same issues at the heart of the current Supreme Court abortion case. Trapped features several of the players in the SCOTUS case and highlights what's at stake for women across the U.S., and that's playing at the E Street Cinema here in D.C. Well, those are our headlines and happenings. When we come back, that speech by Chris Hedges. Stay with us. Today we're going to hear this wide-ranging keynote address by the award-winning author and activist Chris Hedges, who spoke at the major summit on Saudi Arabia organized by Code Pink this past weekend, March 5th and 6th, 2016, here in Washington, D.C., spanning from what Hedges referred to as the atrocity of the House of Saud to the U.S. presidential race, to the specter of American fascism. He pulled no punches in his opposition to the stranglehold of global corporate capitalism. Here is Chris Hedges.
Let's give an amazing warm welcome to Chris Hedges.
Thank you. Well, I am here not only because of my deep respect for Code Pink and Veterans for Peace and great activists like Medea, but also because I think it's long overdue that we began to organize against the atrocity that is called the House of Saud. We have enabled, empowered, and armed one of the most vicious dictatorships, not only in the Middle East, but in the world. One that carries out, as many of you know, forms of oppression, not only against dissidents within Islam, but against women, homosexuals, journalists, human rights campaigners, and listening to the rhetoric of every administration about Iran, it is, and the failure of the press to do their job, the American public has been sold a narrative that totally overlooks the reprehensible actions of the Saudi government. And I, as you know, don't agree with almost anything the Israeli lobby says. However, their question about why we are supporting, as I do support, the BDS movement against Israel is not carried out against countries like Saudi Arabia is a valid question. And I hope that today, out of this conference, we begin to build a BDS movement that is targeted at the Saudi regime. I had the not particularly exclusive experience of being thrown out of Saudi Arabia and then banned from the kingdom when I covered the Middle East for the New York Times. I wrote a story on the religious police, relatively benign, I thought, And that was the end. I didn't get back in until the first Gulf War, when I was with 1st Battalion, 1st Marines, and went into Kuwait and then Basra. I was in Basra during the Shiite uprising in the south. And there was one of many examples of the deep hypocrisy of American foreign policy. We had been sold this line in the second Gulf War about how he kills his own people. And what we were not told is, yes, Saddam Hussein killed his own people with active U.S. involvement, both in terms of Anfal with the Kurds, when we were coordinating ground and air control in the Iran-Iraq war, providing hundreds of millions of dollars in agricultural credit, but also in the Shiite uprising after the first Gulf War, when the Shiites got the upper hand, and I was on my second day, when I was a prisoner, we were attacked by Shiite rebels for 16 hours of a firefight. And the Bush administration permitted Saddam Hussein to put his helicopters up in the air to crush the rebellion. 30,000 Shiites were murdered, at least. And it would not have been possible unless we had intervened to permit the Iraqi military to carry out that slaughter. The first Gulf War is kind of the starting point for the deep devolution that has taken place throughout the region and the rise of a series of failed states that we bear responsibility for, whether in Iraq, whether in the territory controlled by ISIS, Syria, Libya, Afghanistan, Yemen. And that war, in essence, unleashed what certainly through the eyes of Muslims in the region correctly see as American occupation of the Middle East. And none of this will stop until we stop occupying the Middle East. I covered the Israel-Palestine conflict for many years, and the inability on the part of the Israeli government to understand what they were doing has been replicated by the American government in the Muslim world. So when I first got to Israel-Palestine in 1988, it was on the eve of the first Intifada, and it was also coincided with the Jordanian withdrawal from the West Bank. Jordan used to administer the West Bank. And the Israeli government rejoiced that the perfidious King Hussein and the Jordanian government was no longer in control of administering Palestinian territory on the West Bank. The government then made war against the secular East Jerusalem aristocratic elite, Faisal Husseini and others. Then I watched it make war against Arafat. And then we've watched it make war against Hamas. Every attempt to use draconian force to bend a subjugated people to its will has backfired in terms of the rise of a more militant radicalism. I knew Dr. Rantisi head of Hamas before he was assassinated by the Israelis. I knew Nizar Rayan as well. And that process within Hamas. Violence always begets violence. And what many people don't know about Rantisi, and it's something that Joe Sacco and I uncovered when we did a long piece called A Gaza Diary for Harper's Magazine, where we lived in Khan Yunis refugee camp for 10 days, is that Rantisi and many of the other future Hamas activists as a young boy was in Khan Yunis in 1956, when the Israelis occupied for 100 days and carried out wholesale slaughter of Palestinian men and boys. Hundreds. Herded down the street, lined up against walls and shot. And Rantisi's understanding he lost cousins and uncles in that slaughter led to him eventually leading Hamas. He left, he was a pediatrician, studied in Egypt, joined the Brotherhood, came back, and with Sheikh Yassin was one of the founders of Hamas. And even Harper's, as good as it is, when we put that in the story, took it out because it was history, they said. It didn't have any bearing on it. And that led Joe Sacco to spend 6 years of his life writing one of the seminal books on the Middle East called Footnotes in Gaza. Footnotes because everybody had relegated that incident to a footnote. And he went back and interviewed the survivors of that massacre. And I would argue that it is the one of the most important and certainly powerful books I have ever read on the Palestine-Israel conflict. And we have watched exactly this scenario replicate itself in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Syria, where we walk in and attempt to impose our vision of the world on others by force. With deep Saudi complicity, certainly in Syria, if not in Iraq. And what's happened, of course, is that we have legitimated and given rise to forces such as Al-Qaeda and later ISIS. And we have funneled, in our blindness, money and weapons into their hands. When Al-Qaeda in Iraq felt pressure, it moved into Syria. Al-Baghdadi moved into Syria because he knew that, like Afghanistan, it would be a free weapons bazaar, courtesy of the Americans, the Saudis, Qatar, and they wouldn't be asking any questions. And he resurrected his organization, it merged, and became ISIS, an entity that now controls a territory roughly the size of Texas. I don't need to repeat that same failed scenario in Afghanistan with the empowering of Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda. It's a story you know very well. But that inability to be culturally, religiously, linguistically, and historically literate, that belief that we can mold a world according to force, has not only been proven false within the Middle East, but it has been proven false throughout the 20th century through the repeated failure of American imperialism to shape the world in its image, whether that was in Guatemala in 1954 or Iran in 1953 with Mossadegh or Cuba or anywhere else. When you speak in the language of violence, as we do. Then eventually you will teach others to speak back to you in the language of violence. And what were the explosions of 9/11 across a massive city skyline, but an example of the fact that those we had oppressed had learned to speak as we have spoken to much of the world for decades. 1968, when McNamara unleashed the saturation bombing of North Vietnam, he said he was delivering a message to Hanoi. And our victims deliver messages back in the same vocabulary. This cycle of violence now, propelled by arms manufacturers, and there is no rational reason to stay in Afghanistan or Iraq. We have lost in Afghanistan. The Taliban controls far more territory than they did when we invaded. Iraq as a unified country is broken into three parts and is never coming back. That experiment created in the aftermath of the Ottoman Empire is over. The Saudis have dug themselves a very similar kind of hole in Yemen, one that they are going to have a very hard time extracting themselves from, because not only national pride, but the reputation of the king's anointed heir, the defense minister, is wrapped up in this war. And, of course, Libya, an example of the failed policies of the Obama administration, and in particular, Hillary Clinton. But if you watch closely, and we see it in this kind of bizarre circular game that is played on cable news networks, where retired military officials who work for defense contractors urge us on to drop more missiles and use more drones because they profit personally. We dropped, 163 Tomahawk cruise missiles on Libya in those first few days. Each of those missiles costs $1.1 million. That's $500 million they made. They actually ran out of Tomahawks, had to start making them faster. And Saudi Arabia, because it has financial resources, has fallen prey to these arms manufacturers as well. And I think it could be argued that at this point in our corporate coup d'etat, our foreign policy is driven by the war industry and by profit. War is always a business, but I don't think there's any other consideration left. And whether that is the saturation bombing of Gaza, and I will not support Bernie Sanders because I will not sell out the Palestinian people. This is a global fight. And the oppressed in Gaza, like the oppressed Shiites in Saudi Arabia, or those who are suffering in Baghdad or Fallujah, or the streets of Athens, are our compatriots now in the struggle against global capitalism and neoliberal economics. And we have no right, especially as Americans, to decide who among the oppressed it will be convenient to support. We will stand with all of the oppressed or none of the oppressed. This is a movement that is sweeping across the globe and inflicting tremendous suffering on the vulnerable within our borders and outside our borders. And we will have to build international alliances in order to destroy global capitalism. And as anyone in this room who has read climate change reports understands, if we do not destroy global capitalism, then we will have to very soon begin to confront the extinction of the human species itself. This is a battle for life, and it is a battle against the forces of death. And it means that on every issue, including this one, the only mechanism left is prolonged or sustained acts of civil disobedience to begin to break the power of forces that have freed all bonds, all constraints, including legal constraints, all regulation, to exploit and kill until exhaustion or collapse. And that makes what faces us one of the most important moments in human history, one of the greatest existential crises in human history. Because while empires replicate over and over the same pattern, theft of natural resources, acts of genocide, destruction of indigenous cultures, and then move on, we have reached a point in 500 years where there is no other place to move to. And if we go down this time, the whole planet will go with us. And on every single issue, whether it's fossil fuel, whether it's the struggle to return democracy to our system of what Sheldon Wolin calls inverted totalitarianism. And I urge you all to read Wolin's book, Democracy Incorporated, where he spells that concept out. It is only by putting our bodies on the line, by coming out in massive and large numbers, that we will begin to put pressure on these systems that profit off of systems that extinguish human liberty and human life. And the Saudi regime is a kind of poster child for that oppression. And one that we have not only long empowered, but as with Israel, used our power to long enable, to cover up the crimes that it commits against its own people and against others. And so I do think that some of the critics in the Israeli lobby have a point, that we have, those of us who stand as fiercely against the slow-motion genocide being committed by the apartheid Israeli state against the Palestinians, must also stand up against the regime in Saudi Arabia for exactly the same reasons.
If you're just tuning in, this is Community Watch and Comment, the on-the-ground edition on WPFW Pacifica Radio in Washington, D.C., and you're listening to author and activist Chris Hedges delivering the keynote address this past weekend, March 5th and 6th, at the Summit on Saudi Arabia, sponsored by Code Pink here in the nation's capital. We'll pick this up right after this break. Stay with us.
This is for Palestine, Ramallah, West Bank, Gaza. It's about time we globalize the intifada. Listen close, I've got six words for Obama. Long live Palestine, long live Gaza. Palestine, Ramallah, West Bank, Gaza. It's about time we globalize the intifada. Listen close, I've got six words for Obama. Long live Palestine, long live Gaza.
The government supports the people of the UK, didn't. Zionism's not compatible with Judaism. The hijacked faith, the state is misrepresenting Israel equals displacement and ethnic cleansing. I know I'm on a list for being more verbal. Curse every Zionist since Theodore Herzl. Balfour was not a wise man. Shame on Rothschild. Between them, the monster they created has gone wild.
We're a nation of war, of blood. You don't feel like this if you hit me with a stone. Stone. The escape from Iraq is like a disaster. الثمن. سيد القاضي انظر إليه افتح دينيه كم من دليل يصرخ عليه اترك المطرق اعطيني حرياتي واربط
فيه yeah. Tears to laughter, our children don't fear disaster. Living near the master, clear the fastest, hear the casket. We rap when we die from bombastic talk. Looms after hot summer days in the thunder blaze. They murk your dreams like Theodore Herzl screams. In the UN in 48, third intifada. For mother's daughters, sons martyred and empty fathers like
عودة وبس مجتمع كامل بالحبس رصاص ضرب وضرب المطر كبس وكبس النفس ليك انقطع حتى الطفل انرفس ست حدود ام حديد شيل الطير من القفص روح طير طير يا عمي روح انت دمي حياتي وقلبي معك هيدا زنبي ناطر بس المهدي وعيسى ان يهدي والامل الوحيد اللي صفى هو ربي
وين جتو تلفزيون و عمش ميشنن دروغ ميگن داشتم اخبار ميديدم که چه زورا جورا رو بچه ها و عشقای مادر رو زمی میریزن بچه ها شیرینن بهش مشرو بچه ای که تازه یاد گرفته را بره و دستش میگیرن پر کرد بعد تیری زن کم وقت پیش صحنه های شبیه اینو تو چند قدمی میدیدم اه دارم چی میگم
War criminals use illegal weapons like white phosphorus. Burns your flesh to the bone, and if you happen to live, you'll be left infected with cancer. You curse the fact that you did. Forgive me if I wish the same fate on those Israelis responsible for killing all those innocent little babies. I studied the Torah and learned by their own admission Israel's actions are not kosher in their own religion.
بطلع حوالي فيش حياة خدوا أرضي من تحت شاي أعطوني معاناة كنا نحمل طرية نترزى من الله خلونا نحمل بندقية نتوكل على الله مجزرة مذبحة الكل شاف على الشاشات مش اليوم مش ضفة مش غزة ما عم بالصفحات التاريخ شوف المسيح وشوف أكتر من 60 عام دق الأجساد في فلسطين
The devil's got an unholy plan for the holy land So I hold my cabal culture power in the other hand No oasis just blood Things sand, settlements setting up to eliminate child, woman, and man. No such thing as the Middle East, prophet ain't deceiving you. No matter where you stand, there's always something to the east of you. So whether it's the Mossad or the FBI policing you, it's all one struggle until the final breath is leaving you.
الشعب العربي وحدتنا عمود الثغري لازم نتعلم كيف نفكر لازم نتعلم كيف نودي رسالة بدون ما نسكر ابواب الايمان يا سيدي ما كنتش عرفت خيري لو ما جربت غيري تاخد كلامي تجربي مش اهاني
لازم نقطع راس
الوحش عشان يضيع طريقه واخرته تنكشف
And welcome back to this special edition of Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition. I'm Esther Avaram. Over the break, you heard Low Key, Long Live Palestine Part 2 featuring the narcissist Damon Hassan Salam. And in the first half of the show, we were listening to a major keynote address by Chris Hedges given here over the weekend at the summit on Saudi Arabia. We're going to pick up the conclusion of remarks by Chris Hedges.
I want to conclude before we do questions by talking a little bit about what's happening in terms of our presidential elections, because it's not disconnected. What we have seen and what I have written about over the past few years is the collapse of liberalism within American society, and in particular my book, Death of the Liberal Class, focused on this issue. And that book goes back to the First World War and looks at what Dwight MacDonald calls, after World War I, the infection of American society with the psychosis of permanent war, the constant war to ferret out communists or those who are soft on communism, which was used by Wilson, one of our most despicable presidents, to destroy those radical movements, progressive movements, populist movements that had, as Noam Chomsky points out, put pressure on the liberal establishment to carry out incremental or piecemeal reform. That all of the openings in American democracy have always been driven, and this is what Howard Zinn makes clear in his book, The People's History of the United States, have been driven by these outside movements that never achieved formal positions of power. The Liberty Party that fought slavery, and the abolitionists, the Wobblies, the old CIO that carried out the labor wars in this country, which were the bloodiest labor wars in any industrialized nation. Hundreds of American workers were murdered. Tens of thousands were blacklisted and pushed out of their jobs. The suffragists and the civil rights and anti-war movements of the 1960s. And that's why, as Ralph Nader points out, our last liberal president was Richard Nixon. Not because he was a liberal or a conscience, but because there were movements that put pressure on him to pass the Mine and Safety Act, OSHA, the Clean Water Act, all of which were written by Ralph. And there's a scene in Kissinger's memoirs. Do not buy the book. It's 1971. There's a giant anti-war demonstration surrounding the White House. Nixon has taken empty city buses end to end and put them all around the White House as a barricade. And he says, he's looking out the window and he says, "Henry, they're going to break through the barricades and get us." And that's just where we want people in power to be. We have to stop putting our faith in particular political leaders, including Bernie Sanders. We have to understand that the only way we are going to confront the evil of corporate capitalism is by going out in the street and obstructing the ability of this movement to repress, exploit, and kill. And that destruction of our radical movements left us utterly disempowered, as it was meant to. We don't even have the vocabulary anymore to explain to ourselves the class warfare that is being unleashed upon us. And as Chomsky says, that liberal class, that liberal entity, was designed as a kind of safety valve to ameliorate the capitalist system and protect it. And in the myopia of the corporate elites, they've not only destroyed those radical and progressive movements, but they've destroyed the liberal establishment itself, giving birth to this faux liberalism embodied in figures like the Clintons and Barack Obama. So it's under Clinton that you get NAFTA, the greatest betrayal of the working class in this country since the 1948 Taft-Hartley Act. It's under Clinton that you get the destruction of the welfare system, and 70% of those recipients were children. It's under Clinton that you get the deregulation of the FCC, and we end up with goons like the CEO of CBS saying, well, Trump may not be good for America, but he's good for corporate profit. Which translates into, why not fascism if I can make money? Yeah. It's under Clinton that you get the 1994 omnibus crime bill that explodes the prison population and has made, I believe, mass incarceration the most important civil rights issue of our day. And it's under Clinton that you get the destruction of Glass-Steagall, which created firewalls between commercial and investment banks and precipitated the national and global economic crisis.
That's right.
And Clinton did it because he got corporate money. By the 1990s, the Clintons had fundraising parity with the Republicans, or the Democrats did, and in 2008, Obama got more. But that failed liberalism creates, in essence, political paralysis. The government, captured by a narrow, tiny, oligarchic corporate elite, is unable and unwilling to respond to the most basic grievances of the American public or protect their interests. We are far less secure, far less safe, because of the actions of our Republican and Democratic administrations in the Middle East than we were on 9/11. And this paralysis has come with a very mendacious and hypocritical vocabulary, one that unfortunately many in the left bought into. And it is the boutique activism of multiculturalism and diversity and inclusivity, all of which I support, but not when it is severed from justice. Yeah. Especially economic justice for poor people of color in this country. And so while the self-identified left was busying itself with, and let's be clear, inclusivity and multiculturalism and diversity within elite institutions and for elites, they weren't doing anything for oppressed people of women of color. It gave to the national discourse a rhetoric that boomeranged into the proto-fascism that we are watching rise around Donald Trump. Because the Clintons, like Obama, have done nothing for the poor, and in particular, poor people of color. And yet they use that language. And so a disenfranchised white, lower class, working poor, who knows what's been done to themselves, their families, and their communities, hears the rhetoric and believes the demagogues that the reason for their distress is because marginal groups, undocumented workers, Muslims, homosexuals, and let me just throw in here to my Muslim brothers and sisters, you have to fight homophobia within your communities. They believe it. They believe it because of the mendacity of a bankrupt liberal elite. And Richard Rorty, in 1998, in his last book, Achieving Our Country, wrote presciently that in post-industrial America, we would see a rise among nativist, lower-class whites who would revolt against the college-educated elites, because let's be clear, all those people working at Goldman Sachs, I've taught some of them at Princeton. Those college-educated elites, and we see it with the establishment attempting to denounce Trump, people like Romney, who are con artists along with Trump. That what you would see, Rorty says, is this attempt on the part of white nativists not only to turn against a liberal establishment that spoke in that feel your pain language but had betrayed them, but also against the purported values that they represented. And so, because that liberal elite sold us out, it is not only being pushed aside, but the civility that it sought to teach to the underclass is being pushed aside with it. And there is a word for that. It is called fascism. And it is real. And I watched it in the former Yugoslavia. Very same phenomena. Economic meltdown of Yugoslavia. A weak and discredited liberal establishment that betrayed the working class, and the rise vomiting up out of the bowels of a decayed system figures like Radovan Karadzic or Slobodan Milosevic or Franjo Tuđman. And we are not immune from that process. And with the destruction of the left and the repeated failure by the left to grasp that the Democratic Party establishment is a force designed to destroy progressivism and liberalism, a genuine concern, an egalitarian concern for the working poor has essentially been dropped out of the equation. And it's our job to bring it back. And it will only happen when we are willing to stand up, even if no one stands up with us. And that means that there can be no compromise. I mean, the problem with the Sanders campaign, aside from the fact that he is about to start campaigning for Hillary Clinton. Yes, he will. He's already said he will. And he campaigned for Bill in 92 and 96 after Clinton had passed NAFTA and the Omnibus Crime Bill and destroyed welfare. I mean, let's be clear about Sanders. He's a Democrat. He always has been. And he has seniority within the caucus. He has been the main obstacle to third-party movements in Vermont. The Democrats won't run anyone against him because of that quid pro quo. But the major problem is that he doesn't understand that unless we destroy the war machine and empire, this country is going to go right down the tubes. We are destroying ourselves the way empire always destroys itself, expanding beyond the capacity to sustain itself, hollowing itself from the inside. I spoke in Albany yesterday. City after city, not just in upstate New York, but throughout the country. Empty warehouses, empty factories, massive homeless population, fictitious unemployment figures. Real unemployment, as the LA Times pointed out, is about 17%. And what happens with empires is that the brutal forms of control they use on the outer reaches of empire as the heart of empire is destroyed are brought back into empire. Drones, wholesale surveillance, militarized police. 3.1 of our citizens are murdered every day, almost all of them unarmed on the streets of our cities. Empire is the enemy. The U.S. military, the Pentagon, the security and surveillance state are the most dangerous and insidious forces lurking within the body politic and must be utterly defanged if not destroyed. And that has to be the baseline for any political calculation that we make or any activism that we take. Because these people don't care how many people die in Iraq, Americans or Iraqis. They don't care how many people die in Yemen. They don't care how many people die in Pakistan or Afghanistan or Somalia. How many people live in terror 24 hours a day from drones? How many people are tortured in our blood? They don't care. Because it's all about profit. And until we stop them, nothing will change. Thank you.
And that will do it for us on this special presentation of Community Watch and Comment, the on-the-ground edition on WPFW 89.3 Pacifica Radio in Washington, D.C. You've been listening to author and activist Chris Hedges delivering the keynote address this past weekend, March 5th and 6th, at the Summit on Saudi Arabia, sponsored by Code Pink here in the nation's capital. I'm Esther Averam, your producer and host. You can reach our show at onthegroundshow.org, where you can listen to all of our shows, including our past shows. Please like our Facebook and Twitter pages at On the Ground Show. Raise your voice out there. Peace. ¶¶